Mr. Corsland, you have 15 minutes. You want to reserve any rebuttal?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I would like to reserve three minutes.
3 minutes?
Yes, sir.
All right, now, before we start, the clerk, I sent you an email. The assignment of error specifically reads, trial court erred as a matter of law when it denied the defendant's renewed motion to strike due to insufficient evidence that the defendant's fingerprint was found on the outside of the door. Seems to me that that assignment of error addresses what expert fingerprint or what expert's opinion the trial court should find, as opposed to a single fingerprint being not sufficient to convict. And
yes,
I'd like for you to address that, and I'll ask the Attorney General to do so as well.
Yes, sir. May it please the court, and I was notified by your clerk, and I am prepared to keep the issue narrowed to that, Judge. Your Honor, again, my name is Eric Corsland. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I want to be sure,
yes, sir,
your issue will be limited to expert testimony.
Oh, no, sir, Your Honor. My issue in this case is one fingerprint on the outside of the front door of this residence is insufficient as a matter of law.
Right. My question to you, as the clerk indicated, is how is that contained in the language of your assignment of error?
Yes, sir. Your Honor, I believe it's addressed in the appellant's petition for appeal. Specifically, it states that the court denied as a matter of law when it denied the defendant's renewed motion to strike due to insufficient evidence that the defendant's fingerprint was found on the outside of the front door.
I think you misunderstand, perhaps, Judge Frank's question.
Yes, sir.
The Supreme Court and our court have made it very clear that the assignment of error, that is, those words that appear after the specific heading of assignment of error, must lay your finger on the error of the trial court. You have to specifically say why it is the trial court erred. You can't expand beyond that assignment of error in your argument.
Yes, sir.
And as Judge Frank has indicated, you have a fairly limited assignment of error that goes only to whether or not that fingerprint on the door belonged to the defendant.
Yes, sir.
So how are we going into this secondary argument that even if it was his fingerprint, it's insufficient to support the conviction?
I think it's...
Let me add one thing. The purpose of assignment of error is to establish the parameters to give us the issues that we have to decide. So you can't have one assignment of error and then argue something separately. And that the question is... Does that assignment of error sufficiently encompass your argument about a single fingerprint? Is that enough to convict? You follow my question?
I do, Your Honor. And what I would suggest to the court is to further narrow the issue is, was the defendant's fingerprint placed at the door at the commission during the commission of the crime? So, the assignment of error that basically states that the evidence was insufficient, that the defendant's fingerprint was found on outside of the front door, certainly a few words should have been added, and I understand that, Your Honor, during the commission of the crime.
But the issue before us is they weren't added, and with this specific assignment of error, can we address and reach your sufficiency argument? And if so, tell us which cases we're going to need to incorporate into the opinion saying so.
Well, Your Honor, I cited, of course, the Granger, Varker, Williams, Avent, and Parrish, which all deal with the fingerprint issue, and that is within the body of the brief of the appellant. The assignment of error is vague. I understand the court's concern with that.
It's vague. It's specific. It's just not what you're arguing on your brief.
And I respectfully submit it's contained in there. It deals with the sufficiency of the evidence, but further narrowed is the issue that it is the defendant's fingerprint, or that if the fingerprint alone is enough to convict. And I think the title, that the evidence was insufficient, as a matter of law, does contain that. And of course, within the body, I do cite the cases that are directly on point dealing with this particular issue.
You may proceed with your argument.
Yes, sir. You know, assuming the assignment of error is correct, Your Honor, the issue is narrowed, as previously stated, that a defendant's fingerprint on outside of the front door is insufficient as a matter of law to convict. What distinguishes this case from the Avent and the Parrish case, in both of those cases, the placement of the fingerprint and other circumstances were combined with the fingerprint in order to sustain the convictions and make the evidence sufficient.
Do you, at the outset, do you agree that there is sufficient evidence to support the court's conclusion that there's sufficient evidence to support the finding that this was the defendant's fingerprint on the door?
So absolutely.
The only issue is whether this defendant's fingerprint on the outside of the door is sufficient to support the conviction.
Precisely, okay. Judge. And I would argue that the body of the written brief addresses that alone. We do not get into the battle of the experts, so to speak, because I understand the standard on review, Judge. I would argue the Granger case, and that's the whiskey bottle case, where the appellant's fingerprints were on the whiskey bottle, and this court held that that's insufficient. Anybody could have grabbed the whiskey bottle at any time. And in this case, the number 9 finger, which is the ring finger, was found on the front of the door that opens in the inside. And the door was forcibly open. This was a home invasion robbery. And that's the only evidence in this case. No identification, no other circumstances. This is on the outside of the front door of a very large apartment complex readily accessible to the public. It cannot be dated in any way. The record is abundantly clear. The crime scene technician, when asked, do you know when this print was placed there? No. Is there any way to date it? Well, if we knew when the front door was washed, and of course there's no evidence of that. Furthermore, the door is not exposed to the elements of the weather. It's under a breezeway of an apartment complex, so it's protected from the rain. Anybody could touch this door at any time.
From the photographs,
yes, sir.
It appears that there are apartment doors running down the length of the outside hall.
I agree. Yes, sir. So anybody could have touched this door at any time. The fingerprint cannot be dated. And that was this court's...
Does the defendant have any connection to the door or to the apartment complex?
No, sir, Your Honor.
Well, is it normal for people that don't have any connection to a building to go walking down, touching up against the door?
No, sir, Your Honor. I wouldn't say it's normal for people to go down.
It's not reasonable to think that people as a general public might have gotten their fingerprint up there, is there?
No, it's not, Your Honor. And I would, you know, again, I believe it's the Varker case where this court reversed the trial court's conviction where the appellant's handprint was next to a door jamb. Could have been placed there at any time. And certainly the same argument could have been made there. And again, this is an apartment complex, and I think that's important for a couple reasons. One, it does have a breezeway, so it's covered from the elements of the weather. Two, it's not a house in the middle of Pungo or even Chesapeake in some sort of rural area. In fact, this is apartment 204. In the Parrish case, that's where the appellant's fingerprints were on a slip, a deposit slip. Well, it's on the record that the deposit slip was in the possession of the Hardee's restaurant, and the defendant had no reason to be an employee there or touch it. You know, in this case, it does not exclude a very reasonable hypothesis. The defendant could have went to the wrong apartment, could have been a delivery driver, could have been handing out flyers. There's a whole host of reasons. And again, I want to cite to the Varker case.
No evidence of any of those things, though, are there?
Correct.
Does that make them reasonable inferences?
That's really narrowing it down, and that's a crux of this case, and it hits a nail on the head. I would argue it would impermissibly shift the burden to the defendant to have to testify or present evidence to explain his fingerprint on the door. And again, if we get to the Avent case, where it's a broken window 7 feet above where this occurred, I think the placement of the print makes that an unreasonable hypothesis of innocence. Here, on a door that opens inward, the number 9 finger being placed there, and no other evidence whatsoever to support when the fingerprint was placed there.
But we know that he's not a resident. there, right?
There's evidence of that. I cannot dispute that.
We know that he wasn't on the maintenance crew.
Correct.
We know he is never invited to the victim's apartment.
Correct.
So your reasonable hypothesis is that he could have been, what, a visitor or delivery man?
Yes, sir.
Because you had to pass that door to get to other apartments.
Correct. And I think what's noteworthy, Judge Frank, is we can't date the print. So when you talk about this reasonable hypothesis of innocence, we're talking within months, possibly even years, that this could have happened.
Now, the Supreme Court said many years ago that the reasonable inference, a reasonable hypothesis of innocence must flow from the evidence and not from the imagination of defense counsel.
Yes, sir.
I've always liked that quote. Can you tell me any evidence in this case that would allow the trier of fact to conclude somehow that was left somewhere some other time?
And again, respectfully, I'd argue it'd shift the burden to the defense to put on evidence or have the defendant testify. I would argue the location.
It doesn't shift, doesn't it? It just makes something reasonable that in the absence of no other evidence is a figment of imagination.
Correct.
I mean, that's not making the defendant bear the burden of proving innocence.
Well, then, Your Honor, respectfully, I would cite the Granger case. In that case, that was reversed by this court. In that case, should the defense have put on evidence that he touched a whiskey bottle that was used to strike the victim, where this court held that the prints alone, that cannot be dated, he could have touched a bottle at any time?
I don't think you understand what my comment was. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that placement of the print on the door, on the outside of the door, in the apartment complex, a large apartment complex, covered by a breezeway, and again, the print cannot be dated in any way except for the last time the outside of a front door was washed, which is certainly unreasonable to suspect that people wash the outside of their front door. I think the facts in this case are analogous to Granger, Varker, and Williams, all reversed when it's just a fingerprint in a place accessible by the public, which is precisely the facts in this case. I think it's greatly distinguished from the Parrish case with the deposit slip that they were able to put in a window of half an hour to 45 minutes. In the Avent case, where the place was broken into by a broken window, 7 feet high, and the defendant's fingerprints were in that case. Now, I would like to reserve respectfully 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Let me ask this quick question. Turner Court said, while a defendant doesn't have the obligation to testify himself or to offer testimony to explain the presence of his prints, a court cannot supply evidence that is lacking. How do we address that?
I would argue, the Commonwealth attempted to do this by placing into evidence a manager of the apartment complex that he's not a resident there. Certainly from the Pace family that he's never been an invited guest here. If the print was inside, I think that would be a stronger argument inside the residence. But again, it doesn't exclude the fact that this, where the print was recovered, and this is what it comes down to, is readily accessible by the public, and the print cannot be dated in any way.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Adelfio.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. Your Honors, the Commonwealth asks that you affirm this conviction because there was sufficient evidence, as the defendant conceded,
Let's talk about the question that we had posed first.
Absolutely. The only assignment of error before this court and the only question before this court is whether or not the evidence was sufficient to prove that it was his fingerprint on the exterior of the door. That is the only thing that was challenged in the assignment of error, the only issue that was challenged in the assignment of error. When you read the assignment of error, it is not a general challenge as to the sufficiency of the evidence for the conviction. If you look to Supreme Court cases in Ray Mosley, that's at 273 Virginia 688, that was a 2007 case, that states that the assignment of error essentially limits the review of an appellate court to a specific issue. Garlock Sealing Technologies versus Little, which was at 270 Virginia 381. That was a 2005 case. So they would, it would not, the Supreme Court in that case said it would not consider whether the circuit court improperly imposed certain legal duties on the appellant because the assignment of error in that case only challenged whether the circuit court properly admitted certain evidence.
How about the Supreme Court's recent decision in Herring? How does that play into this? It looks to me that the Supreme Court is trying to get us to relax a little bit on the assignment of error analysis. And as long as the appellant points to the specific ruling of the trial court that he or she believes to be an error, that's enough.
Your Honor, I would suggest that Herring absolutely supports the Commonwealth's position that this assignment of error does not challenge the general sufficiency of the evidence. In Herring, the assignment of error stated that there was insufficient evidence to show that he had committed the crime. That is a general sufficiency argument. It was a broad argument. In this case, we have a very specific challenge to the finding that the fingerprint found at the scene was, in fact, the defendant's.
So the takeaway from all this is you're better at just painting with a broad brush and say the trial court erred in refusing to grant the motion to strike rather than actually telling us why in your assignment of error.
I'd suggest under the current state of the case law that would be correct, Your Honor.
That's helpful.
Finley and Herring tell us what the assignment of error has to include to get past the dismissal.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's it.
That's correct. And in this assignment of error, I would suggest that it was very specific.
This assignment of error points the finger to the error alleged by the trial court.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because you used the wrong finger.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I believe I heard defense counsel concede that if the court's review of this case was limited to only whether there was sufficient evidence to show that the fingerprint belonged to the defendant, that the conviction must be affirmed based on Reiner and other case law that says that when you have a determination relying on the credibility of experts, that is a determination that is deserving of deference. So when the case is limited to the assignment of error as stated by the defendant, that this conviction should be affirmed. If the court would like me to address, I'm happy to address the second issue raised by the defendant brief, which was not encompassed by the assignment of error. The Commonwealth does not concede that issue is properly before the court, but I'm happy to address it if the court desires.
While you're here and you got time.
Of course, Your Honor.
You need to earn your pay.
Absolutely. If the court does determine that this assignment of error covers a general sufficiency challenge, the conviction should still be affirmed. Excuse me. This was a private residence. That it was not a public place. It wasn't a public place in that it wasn't a commercial business where it's normal to pick to touch things, whether it be a television or a
liquor.
But we
do know, based on the photographs, that this was a common hallway to a number of different apartment doors.
That's correct, Your
Honor. And that people would come and go for whatever reason. We know that he wasn't an occupant.
That's correct.
But he could have been a delivery man. He could have been anything, a door-to-door peddler. So it was a public, the door was located on a public access, wasn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor. But as Judge Bungwarder pointed out, I think that would be... There's no evidence that it is normal to touch people's doors, the doors of private residences, and that would require this court to supply evidence to the fact finder as discussed in, or excuse me, supply evidence as discussed in Turner. And there's no duty on the defendant to present evidence, but this court cannot supply that evidence in support of their arguments.
This print was found on the door itself, was it not?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And there was some evidence that the masked intruder was holding the door.
That's correct.
By the door, not by the knob.
That's correct. Samantha Pace stated that the second perpetrator, whose face she could not see, stood at the door in such a way that he could see. He stood cockeyed to the door in such a way that he could see both inside and outside of the residence. And
Is there a reasonable inference from those facts that he could have had his hand on the door?
Absolutely.
Or outside the door?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Was it from his left hand?
The fingerprint was his left ring finger.
And didn't the door open the other way?
I should know that, Your Honor, and I apologize. I do not know the answer to that question.
Did he have a gun?
I
can't recall. That's all
right. I know that the second perpetrator said, don't look at me, and he threatened them, and I cannot remember if he actually held a gun.
He's holding something in his right hand, which would leave his left hand the only hand free.
I have a photograph. The door, if you're facing outside, the door opens inward, but on the left. So if I'm looking this way, I would be touching the door like that.
If that's the case, if it's an issue as to his left hand would have been inside the apartment as opposed to outside the apartment, then it's certainly possible that he touched the door prior to them kicking it in.
Why wouldn't there be prints on the inside of the door?
Any number of reasons, Your Honor. I think the fingerprint expert witnesses testify that depending on the surface of the door, fingerprints may or may not take, and if there was some sort of substance on the interior of the door or it had been recently cleaned, I think that there's any number. I don't think that anything can be read into the fact that there was an absence of fingerprints on the inside of the door based on the evidence before the court. And this case certainly is distinguishable from Granger. In Granger, the victim was hit on the back of the head with a liquor bottle. And the court determined that the defendant's fingerprints could have been placed on the liquor bottle at the point of sale or because it was in the general course of commerce.
What is different about that? I mean, as Judge Frank has noted, this is not a house that's set back off a street with a lot. I mean, this is a hallway through which a lot of people go, both residents and visitors of those residents and delivery men and everybody else. So it's about as public as a liquor store would be, isn't it?
I would suggest that it's normal to pick up bottles or merchandise. I would suggest it's less normal there's less normal behavior in the normal course to touch in people whom you don't know their doors. And there was testimony that he had not been employed by the complex. He was not a maintenance man. He didn't live in the complex. The Paces had never had him had that individual in their home. They did not know him.
Was there any evidence how long they'd lived there?
5 years, I believe, Your Honor. And I can point you to, with the court's indulgence, I can probably point you to the citation.
I think you're right on the 5 years.
That was at 361 through 362. They lived in the apartment complex for 5 years, and he had not been in the house as a part of the maintenance crew during that time. The circumstances have to reasonably exclude the hypothesis that the fingerprint was left at a time other than the home invasion. I would suggest that they certainly do in this case. This was a private residence. As I mentioned before, the Paces did not know the defendant. He'd never been to the home. This is not a situation where there was a reasonable explanation for his fingerprint to be on the door. Unless the court has any other questions, I'd ask that you affirm the conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Briefly, regarding the assignment of error being sufficient, certainly it should have been placed in there, the print left there during the commission of the crime, but I would argue it's sufficient enough to raise this issue. Assuming that it is sufficient, I again point to this court, there is no evidence in the record that this print was placed there during the commission of the crime.
That was the argument that that's not normal for people just to walk up and
certainly
what is this is Ring finger? What the finger that is?
Ring finger, Judge. Assuming we're all married here, we all know the ring fingers. Well, I would argue it's not normal to hold the door shut from reaching your hand in the inside. In fact, Marcus Pace testified that after the perpetrators left, he held the door shut by just pushing it shut. It opens from the inside, as Judge Frank observed in the photos. Secondly, we can't date the print. I can't emphasize that enough, and that's within the case law. There's a host of reasons why his print could still be there after a long period of time. There was what came out at trial, a Halloween sticker on the door sign. Maybe he's going trick-or-treating. Maybe he's a delivery driver. Maybe he went there when the Paces weren't home. I'm sure in the 5 years that they lived there, they're not there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't think it's a hypothesis subject to my creative imagination. I think it's a reasonable hypothesis, just as reasonable it was in the Williams case and the Granger case and some of these other cases. In fact, where they talk about, you know, imagination of counsel, that's where they tried, the defense attorney in Parrish tried to say that the defendant could have touched a bank slip while I was in the manufacturing process. That's subject to the imagination of counsel. Or in the Evan case where it's broken glass and the prints are on there, defense counsel tried to argue, oh, the defendant could have picked up the broken glass and put it back on the ground and then placed it back in the residence. That is vastly distinguished from this case of a door protected by a roof and readily accessible to the public. I appreciate this court's attention.
Thank you, counsel. Attention. Will yes, sir. Counsel, and the court is adjourned.
All rise.